Hey, everyone. So you may notice, first of all, this is not the normal introduction because I just wanted to give you a little heads up about the structure of this podcast. You may have noticed there was no podcast last week. That's because, unfortunately, it got lost to the technology gods. We were able to salvage about the first 15 minutes of it, which I think gave a good sense as to our overall reactions to the episode. So we're going to toss it to that first. And then when that's done, we'll just kind of slide back into finishing up the conversation about last week. And then we'll do a full installment of the podcast this week. So let me fire it off and we'll go back to the normal recording we had for episode 10 and we'll lead it off with that. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Challenge Vendettas or Hot Butt podcast for episode 10. I am Brian Cohn. Here with me as always is my co-host Allie Lesher. Allie, how are you?
I'm doing well. Happy that this episode is this week and you are here to discuss it. Not that I didn't love talking to Rourke, but I feel like you definitely have to be here this week.
Yeah, this is a big one. I think this is, can we say level one challenge? I think this is it, right?
I didn't feel like it was level one challenge.
Oh, I thought it was big time level one challenge. The whole episode had me riveted.
I found it like really difficult to watch at times. And the parts that were not the difficult ones to watch, I found like overacted. So right. We'll see. Which ones were which? Was it hard to watch?
I think this is the difference that you find sympathy for people on these shows. Like you sometimes do feel bad for people, and I just always try to keep them in the prism of just these are TV characters. So I could, even though they're miserable and going through some horrible things, like on my screen, I could just enjoy it and the entertainment for what it is.
So, but that's like irresponsible, right? So like it's not that I feel, and we'll get more into it. It's not at all that I feel bad in this situation. I more was uncomfortable because of what a situation, like it's almost like, you know, I haven't watched it yet, so I won't be spoiling anything, but that new documentary, like The Push on Netflix, where they're like seeing if they can convince a normal guy to murder someone. Like I more felt like this was an exercise in what a reality television show could like make some people become, more than I like felt bad for an individual person.
That's an interesting thing. But is the people who were doing it weren't like people who were new to this world. Like I think if these are people who are new, that's like a way to go down. But I mean, Jemmy and Kayla and Brittany, like, I mean, this isn't their first rodeo. So it's interesting that like this would be like their breaking point to kind of go a little bit wackadoo.
Well, it's not like Jemmy's been an angel for her entire season career. And I think it's all circumstantial, right? Like not every show drives people. Like there are plenty of people in this house who didn't throw things over a balcony. But like Kayla, the evolution of Kayla here is the saddest story or the most interesting story, depending on how you want to view it, where like she was the person isolated from the house that everybody was on. And now like you transform the social dynamics and she's doing the things that could have, would it were in some ways done to her and that she cried about. So like it's more just, I actually had a conversation with a friend today about like, would I ever go on Survivor? No one's asking me. I'm not saying like I'm, and the answer is always no. And it's because like reality television can bring out a side of you that you don't like or want to see for all of America to see. And a lot of that was in my head when I was watching this. Like, am I saying that I couldn't see myself getting caught up in groupthink and doing something that when you step away looks and is absolutely batshit crazy horrible? I don't know. You know, like I'm not like I'm saying I'm above it, but it just like was unpleasant to watch from that perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it's good that you brought up Kayla because she was for me like the one of the more the curious just lack of self-awareness and her own kind of personas, like what she's gone through. Like everyone else is like hasn't really faced this level. I mean, this was Kayla, as you said, like a last season, like with the one who was the outcast and ridiculed and like brought the tears. And now she's like literally doing like when people like think of like a mean girl act, it's like, oh, you can't sit with us. And she literally said the phrase, you can't sit with us. So like her lack of just awareness is, it was just mind boggling throughout this entire episode.
So let's like get into it all in, because there's a lot more to say on the subject, I'm sure, from both of us. And as usual, I enjoy that we bring different perspectives here that people can agree or disagree with. This is where, and like maybe this was, I'm more willing to say that like the Devin Bananas arc of it was like level one in terms of excitement of just like the whole thing.
Yep.
But from start to finish, it was very theatrical in a way that I was starting to question, which I never do at the challenge. Like, how produced are these moments? Like, is this that something Bananas and Devin were contracted to do? Has this become WWE where like everything's predetermined? Like, I was just sort of like, from the beginning, he's like getting this soliloquy. I watched online. Was this part of the episode too, where he's like, there's a running bus nearby and he's like waxing poetically about like how they blew their opportunity to vote Bananas in?
I think so. I mean, that sounds right. I can't imagine they would add a scene to
what
the
was before. It was before the like last like Kyle being like, I don't remember who got sent home. Like, let's watch from last week. It was just a very strange scene. But even if that wasn't a part, or it was, the rest of it is just like this relentless campaign. Like, I'm going to light him up. I'm going to craft this drama. I'm going to do all of this wizardry. I'm going to take credit for things that I don't even deserve credit for. And then I'm going to barely beat him in a light, bright puzzle. Like, I just was like, so not buying into it. And that, I mean, people don't want to hear that. Like, people want to hear what you have to say, Brian, which I'm sure is going to be better than what I just
yeah
said.
See, I'm a sucker. Like, I don't care, make it WWE. I don't really care. Like, make it entertaining. And like the way they set it up and they built it throughout the whole episode, and yeah, I mean, obviously Devin does not deserve as much credit as he is a claiming, and I don't really know how much credit people are giving him online or whatever, but I mean, it was just masterful the way they built this episode and the way like he laid out his plan and whether or not like he deserves credit for it working. I mean, his plan in his mind worked, so and it, like, everything came crashing down around everyone else, and like, to me, I was super entertained. I was super entertained to watch Bananas get rattled, because whether he'll say it or not, he was clearly rattled through that this whole thing, and that was from Devin's doing, so I'm gonna give him credit at least for that.
Is like, I think the most interesting story here was the Tony decision, like that, like the student becoming the master, like, became, I think, the only storyline that seemed genuine, because I don't, and maybe Tony is such a good actor. I don't think Tony like has it in him to do anything besides like say what he feels, mm-hmm. and a lot often to his own detriment.
Right.
But I like this intro scene during Devin's first campaign, let's call it the primaries, to get Bananas even into the Inquisition. Kayla's all in. Zach, for some reason, is already a lost cause, is going to vote for Nelson no matter what. I have no read on the game here, because if you told me last week which of these three was going to be the dead vote, like, don't even bother trying to convince him to vote for Bananas, I would have said Tony.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. I would have thought Zach would have been the one to make the pitch of, like, you know, we're not going to be able to beat Bananas in the end. Like, you guys aren't really that close. Like, he's got much, you know, he's Leroy's his real number one. This is your chance to make your move. And, yeah, it was stunning that Zach was like, no, this is, I'm voting Nelson.
Is Devin right when Devin says to Tony, like, Johnny would do this to you?
100%. I mean, I don't know if you'd do it, like, at this exact moment, because I think for Bananas, he probably would want to have another ally in the house. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, if Bananas is picking between himself and Tony, he's going to do what he needs to for himself.
I totally agree with that. Bananas would absolutely choose himself over Tony. I mean, I later he says, like, I never voted you in. I mean, like, Tony was, well, that was last season, right, where Tony was, like, the confirmed bottom once they got down to, like, Hunter and their alliance.
I think so.
But I don't know if that was the same thing in Tony's, was Tony's choice here. Like, we're at I know we're 10 episodes into the season, but we're at a pretty early stage of the game. And with Devin, I mean, like, let's not be results oriented for the time being. Devin's in the ring. Is this really the time that you feel like, A, you have the best shot at him, and B, like, it's necessary now?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think for Tony, you know, he has to be the more aggressive one in terms of, like, who's going to cut who, I guess, between him and Bananas. Because for Johnny, the worst case scenario, if Tony goes to a final with him, he's still in a pretty good position to win, where Tony can't let him get to a final. So he has to kind of jump the gun a little bit. So even if this is a little early, and even if it's not even that early, I mean, it's what, there's like 15 or 16 people left. I mean, that's probably like, wasn't that like half the cast? So, I mean, there's been like some of them, like, double eliminations and people have quit. So there's not like that many people still left in the start of the game. So, I mean, I think it's a fine spot, especially when you see the elimination and you can get a sense that it isn't like, you know, a true physical thing. There's going to be some mental element to it. So I think it's not the worst timing.
Well, and we'll talk about that later, because we got some questions about it. Something Rourke and I discussed last week. But, like, in this case, like, we're still at this stage, let's just say, and Tony's starting to get the seeds planted. And I do, I mean, I haven't heard from Tony. I do kind of think regardless, Tony was going to put bananas in. I think it was great if he saw the elimination and adjusted. But if not, I think he kind of was sold on this. But let's say you don't know the puzzle, right? And when you're weighing these options out, Devin's in the bottom. And up until now, Bananas has been a really good ally for Tony in the sense that he has often promoted Tony to being in the Troika. Like, he's wasn't it Tony and Kyle when he said, let's put them in?
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Tony's been in the Troika a lot. If you establish, if you break this trust here at this window with Bananas and put him in and he comes back, you will never see the Troika again. Just the way that the Troika gets formed, the way that people have power, I would be very surprised if Tony ever gets that opportunity again and is constantly in a free fall until the elimination. So I just feel like if you're Tony and you're going to take the shot, like, you better be sure. And Devin, to me, like, Bananas has let you establish trust and be in the Troika many times, and you've been performing really well and can be in the Troika on your own. And, like, once you establish this trust with him, like, he'll never think you're throwing him in, and you can pick your spot a little bit better. I mean, I guess it's hard to say because it did work. But as right. I was watching this, right. I couldn't believe that Tony is going to let Devin be his main shot at Bananas.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tough situation because it's, you know, like you said, like, if Bananas comes back, then Tony's target number one. But then even if he doesn't take the shot here, like, he's still, Tony still has a big target for himself because, like, people are going to try to take a shot at him to take a shot at Bananas through him. So if there's a situation where if, like, only Bananas is free and Tony could be the one to take a shot against, like, that could be something that could happen. So he kind of, like, this opens him up now to have kind of like the bigger alliance protecting him. So yeah, even if Johnny came back, like, he would go after Tony, but he may now have a little bit more of the support of other people in the house that, you know, in a position of power, he may not be able to get Tony.
I mean, the reality is the people who are anti-Bananas tend to be the weaker people in the house. The stronger people in the house tend to have alliances with Bananas. Like, I just don't believe that Tony is the guy they'd gun for over Leroy, let's say, in the, like, take out a strong ally. So I do think people underestimate Tony because of his past performance. And I don't know that his performance this season has been enough to change their minds. Like, I think they're kind of sleeping on him, which is a good place for him to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just don't. I don't think that he would be the number one person of Zach who wouldn't even consider voting in Bananas, of Leroy, who's Bananas' best friend. Like, I don't think Tony's the first in the line of fire. I do think Tony's the first in their line of fire if when they're going to eat themselves, which is something he has to consider because it's happened before.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I don't buy that as, like, a reason that he was, like, desperate. And I don't necessarily think that coming back with this army on your side of Devin, Nelson, and, like, you have Kara and Kyle against you then. Like, I'm sure, I guess Kyle was, it's so hard because
it's so hard.
The people who are even aligned, like, here's the risk you don't have. The people who are aligned with Bananas are not going to be angry at Tony tomorrow morning. Bananas is gone. They're all grateful. It didn't have to be them, and they can move on. But if he's still in the house, I don't think the army you gain from the misfit group with, you know, who even voted, who barely got enough votes, couldn't even send Bananas in over him, over Devin, would benefit Tony. I don't even know if I'm making sense because this is such a crazy season, but I guess I should stop living and not being results oriented because we saw what we saw. So yeah. I guess it was the right decision based on that.
Yeah, I mean, based off that, obviously it worked. But like you said, I mean, there's no, it's a risky move no matter, like, something. But sometimes that's the point. Sometimes risk pay off. Like, yeah, like, you can get burned because that's not, like, the safe move. The safe move for Tony is just to ride it out and either hope that, you know, Bananas just, like, gets, like, forced into elimination just, like, based on the number of people left or someone else takes a shot and it works. But, I mean, that's why a risk is a risk because, you know, there's a big downside. But sometimes they have a great payoff. And here, like, this was clearly a great payoff.
Yeah, funny you should mention that. Let's get right to the result. No time to waste with back-to-back episodes to talk about. Before we talk about that result, historic result, potentially, dare I say, we should talk about TJ's slap on the wrist here to Kayla. What did you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of a little weird just because of how inconsistent the show is with this type of stuff. Like, this is, like, over the years, this is not the worst type of bullying or any type of thing we've seen. I mean, just like, thinking about, like, for things that Laurel's done to Big Easy, or just thinking about things that have done to Kara in the past. Like, so for this to be their stance, I don't know if it's just, like, the sign of the times that they want to just, like, keep up with, like, you know, keep covering their bases or what the basis was. Unless there was something a lot worse that maybe Kaylee told them when she went to the hotel. It was very weird timing to really clamp down on this now.
I did think, and maybe it was the edit, but I watched the show. I watched, like, it was pretty egregious to me what happened. Like, the stuff they were saying, and most of our conversation about it got lost. But, like, the like mean girl mentality is real, and it was really hard, I felt, to watch. To drop all of your shit over the balcony. Like, not so much like the destruction of property, but just the whole attitude of it, the exclusion of it. But that said, it is always in the back of my mind that they not only didn't do crap about Camilla, but they totally shielded her and didn't show anything about the stuff with Leroy, which is just, I mean, like, it's on my mind every time I watch a show that occurred and was protected. I do think that this is probably MTV saying, wow, we effed that up, and like paid the price on Joe's versus Bros or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you're saying, like, it's right. Not the first time people have floated a suitcase or dumped crap on people. Like, some nasty, vile stuff happens in the challenge house. But yeah, it's always going to be there. Like, you had a blatant racist yelling at someone about racism. You protected them and brought them back.
That was a new voice side of you. I
was like shaking in my rolly chair that I have, my office chair, because it's really just that. And we've been able to marinate on this for too long. Right. Will Simon says, were you surprised the show immediately took such a firm stance on the three girls being in the wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it also, I mean, I think it also had to do with the fact that Kaylee then goes and quits, right? Like, I figure if she, not like shrugs it off, but if she's like battles through it and is works through it and is fine and stays in the game, maybe they don't go that route. But the fact that they have to know that she's quitting, I don't think she just like sprung this on them randomly after the elimination. I think that had to play a part.
100%. She went to quit and they were like, let's just go to the ring and you'll quit at the end. Yeah. One thing, a lot has happened on the internet and it's so exhausting and horrible. So like, a lot of people want to say stuff about this. I don't have anything in front of me because I'm a goddamn professional, but I did listen to a clip of, I think, Devin on another podcast that I will later attribute to. It might've been Derek's, basically saying, that, like, we didn't see anything that Kaylee did in the house and that, like, Kayla was sort of, like, within her rights and that she was, like, lying about her and there was a room switch. Like, basically, Kaylee was in a room with Kayla and then left to live with whatever the other room was and, like, started shit-talking that room. And you know how people take their rooms. It's, like, the fam. You don't come for the fam. You don't come for the room. So, we didn't see the whole story, and presented without further comment, Kaylee's been pretty foul online. So who knows? I don't condone what happened.
Yeah, who knows?
But we definitely didn't see the full story.
No, but I mean, if it's about the rooms, then I mean, that's like the clear battle lines at least for this season, probably even more so, but maybe in other seasons. But this one, it's like the rooms are that's their crew and you don't go against that. So,
all right. Let's talk about the highlights here with Devin's big win against your boy. The moments that stick out for me, we go back and forth with like what we're remembering, you know, a week and a half out or whatever it is. I don't know, days.
Right.
Like, Tony, to me, is nailing this in terms of, I mean, we talked about it, but, like, I think this is a good move, whether or not it's the right time, like, it ends up being right. He loses me at the theatrics of it. The fake out with, I'm sorry, Nelson, you're gonna have to wait a little longer. Like, he's just trying so hard, and it just doesn't come off as genuine at all to me.
Yeah, I mean, the move is genuine. He does play it up, but I don't mind that. I mean, obviously, it's very phony the way he goes, like, you know, like a reality TV host that's like teasing for a commercial break or whatever it is. But I don't mind it as much just because I think the move, it takes over the whatever he was going to do in that moment. I can look past and just, you know, this is his moment. He wants to kind of play it up for the cameras. I'm fine with it. I can look past it.
I'm not like saying this destroyed the whole thing for me. I just feel like Tony has shown so much potential this entire season, but he's trying to now like play the role of Bananas. I feel it's like Tony playing Bananas, where as if we see like Tony playing Tony this season, and you know, it's Tony time, so we'll see more this season. I think that's a better spot for him when he like can't be an actor, and when he's the spotlight's on him in the ring, like, don't be Bananas, just be a buffoon. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's Tony trying to be Bananas won't work for him because I think his personality is just so much different, where he just has to play to himself. Because I mean, whatever it is, he has this likability factor, I think, amongst a lot of people, that even when they get mad at him, it seems like people kind of forget or move on over the next season. So if he just plays to that, that's where he can shine. And maybe even going forward, like, if he plays likability, Bananas will look past this, and then they work together again. So that's where he should really focus.
So let's take just a couple more questions to wrap up this moment here where Devin wins. You know, I don't know if I made the joke in the part you guys have heard or not, and now I'm stressed. Whatever. So Derek Blaze says, is Bananas officially washed up? Ever since Rivals 3, he seems to get more and more chinks in the armor every season.
Nah, this is... I mean, it's not a fluke loss because this is a very like a normal type challenge elimination loss. This was a clear loss, but this was one where this is not up to his, I guess, his strength. Like if this was a more physical one, he probably would have won. So, I mean, you know, he's in a lot of these. He's going to lose some of them. He's going to win some of them. This is one he's going to lose. I'm not shaking it off.
Jonathan Foreman says, why is Tony getting the credit for being cemented as a legend when that title should clearly be given to Devin?
I mean, I think the move is like the bigger deal. I mean, Devin was always going to be trying like to win an elimination. That's not something to like accredit that much about. I mean, he was going to try to win no matter what. It takes Tony and I guess everyone else to like get him into elimination, which I think is like the bigger deal. So for that, I mean, Tony gets a lot of the credit.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger risk to Tony's game, right? Like it's a bigger move to be the one who betrays your brother in buffoonery and send him in than it is to be Devin, who's on the bottom and doesn't have a real chance to win the final, certainly not with Bananas in the way, who's has everything to gain by even taking the shot and losing. Like Devin loses to Bananas, he's getting a call even earlier than he did last season to be on the next season. You know, like he does not need to win to benefit from this. Tony really put more on the line here than Devin.
Yeah, and this has been something Devin's been building towards for a while. This isn't, you know, like a random thing that Devin's just targeting Bananas. I mean, he's been doing this ever since he's been on the show. So, like, this feud is there. The Tony one is the one that was just created.
Ashley Bedazowitz says, who's set up better now moving forward, Tony or Devin?
I mean, Tony definitely has the higher upside to win the game because I just think in a vacuum, I'd take Tony's chances in a final more than Devin. I mean, long term, I think this goes very well towards both of them for future like callbacks and like their kind of storylines. But for this particular season, it's got to be Tony.
Yeah, I do think largely Devin's position in the house is completely unchanged by this move. I mean, that's what I said last week, right? Like looking ahead, it does seem like Tony is at least protecting Devin in this week's episode, and we'll talk about that. But I think just like on a pure watch, Devin doesn't really gain much besides getting Bananas out of the house. I don't think anybody's looking at him as more of a physical threat than before. I think it's just sort of like Devin talks the talk and beat Bananas in a puzzle. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I did not mention that Bananas was on the Twitter and on the interview circuit, like People, Us Weekly, like he's in those magazines doing interviews, online at least. And he said he like had the worst injury that he's ever had on the challenge. And I don't know what the injury has to do with the Light Bright puzzle, but yeah. So Bananas is already sort of saying Devin doesn't have shit because of this challenge. I think most of everyone is like really happy that he's gone, but I don't know that it's going to advance Devin's position.
Yeah. I mean, no one's going to be looking at Devin now as like a Zach or a Brad as like this big challenge threat that we have to get out. I mean, I think this was the type of challenge that Devin was looking to win and the house thought he could win. And that, like I, that, like you said, that doesn't change. The Tony thing changes because now he could be viewed as more as like a mental threat, and even some of his physical play has gotten better. So, yeah. So the Tony pendulum has swung. Devin is pretty much stayed the same.
And I think, again, I don't know when we said this or if I said this to myself in the mirror, like Tony can win a challenge, right? Like he has work to do, but he could win. And I think that's why we're seeing him get more of the credit in the edit. Devin is not winning a challenge. I mean, maybe he is. I don't know that I ever really thought I'd say that Tony could win. So anything can happen. But between the two of them, like Tony is really the threat moving forward.
Yep, absolutely.
And we couldn't have a better trans. I mean, if we want to say something more about Kaylee quitting.
Nope.
Okay. Perfect transition with the opener here of Devin smashing the actual banana.
Yeah. Very little symbolism, which I like. It's good to see that.
That did kill me. I love that. You'll get me on an obvious joke any day.
Yeah. I mean, Devin, he's, you know, he said he was riding high. This is like the best moment of his life. So, I mean. Not, it's a weird moment for it to be the best moment of your life, but it's good for him.
Kevin Gilreath wants to know, how are we liking Tony time?
I mean, I like Tony in this spot. This is like a new side of Tony that I like. So I like seeing him kind of doing things that are not destroying his life and his family. So I'm in on all of it.
See, I thought they meant Kevin meant the like phrase Tony time. But he probably didn't. But I'm going to answer about that. I don't know. Did we get him talking about Tony time last week?
I thought it was this week.
No, I know. But like, I wasn't sure if he like it was sort of in that parallel, like that transition between last week and this week. So I was like, did they show us that? Because I feel like I would have remembered. That killed me that he's just going around the house, like ripping bananas thing down and saying it's Tony time. Like that to me reads more of like Tony like on the rise to win a challenge than like Tony trying to mimic what Bananas does for producers. Like let Tony be Tony, go around pounding your chest, saying it's Tony time. Like the kitschiest little thing ever. I was into that.
Yep, I'm in there. Look, this was like, as I said, this is a big moment for both of them. So whatever they're going to do in these moments, I support.
I didn't say it's a big moment for both of us. I was like, it really was, you know, it was a good episode. Oh, this is what I meant by did we see it last week? They showed him saying it in the recap when he voted bananas in. Like, sorry, bananas, it's Tony time.
Yeah, and then he.
I don't recall that from last week, but I'm glad that we saw it this week.
Yeah, but then him like putting his name on top of the leaderboard was very cool to say.
Can I? Which isn't true, right? Because isn't that about money?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, 100% not true. But the symbolism is there, so I'll take it. It's fine.
I have to say, interject, and people, you know, don't at me because I don't care. I've been watching lately on MTV.com, and it's like through my mom's zip code in suburban New Jersey, whatever. If anybody else can feel me on this, please at me at Lash Tweets. They have the most hilarious local commercials that I haven't said nothing about until Chris Daughtry, a former American Idol and former singing fan, showed up on a backdrop of rainbows, kittens in space, saying, hey, Staten Island, like, can't wait to see you at my concert. And it was as though, like, you think our sound quality is bad. This, and he was like, see details below. And there were no details below. And it was just the best thing I've ever seen in my life. So if anybody's seeing this, I'd also like to talk about the Unity Bank commercial, but I won't say anything more because I won't waste any more time.
That was commercial talk with Allie.
If people care, I will record this and I will put it on Twitter because it's amazing.
I guarantee there's at least one person out there that agrees with you and has been waiting to talk about this with someone. And they're like, Eureka, I found my soulmate.
Well, if that person's saying Eureka, don't bother reaching out because I'm not interested. I feel about as exposed as Devin in the pool. So let's get back to business here. Were you surprised with Leroy's reaction to Banana's exit?
A little, because as much as he and Banana's are close, he's usually the one who's like, you know, yeah, they're friends, but I'm looking out for me. So him gone would be great for me. But he kind of more leaned towards like him being out on his own. And now, speaking of exposed, he's now more exposed to being tossed in.
Yeah, I also thought it was just like a little bit of a peek inside what like what Leroy is sort of missing in his strategic game when his summary of what happened is that like people don't like bananas. So that's why he's home. But he likes bananas and that's right. why he's sad. I was like, that's not what happened, Leroy. But OK, OK.
I mean, I guess I can get it from his perspective that like he's like this is like his truest ally, that it does help to have him in the game, especially like, I mean, it's still sort of early. It's hard to really to tell exactly how early we are. We could be near the end. We could be in the beginning. I have no idea. So for him, I guess it makes sense that he's upset, but like I think he should be seeing the bigger picture because he's seen the bigger picture before about wanting threats out that he may be friends with.
No, that's true. Maybe this was just like an odd moment of that I'm picking up too much on. All right, back on Leroy's team.
Here we go. What about the Natalie Nelson short-lived friendship that will eventually turn to dust?
I see them having those like best friend forever rings from SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Like it's just like a very like, oh my God, like we're so whatever. I will say the alliance between them to me, and I know this is crazy, makes both of them more likable in at least this moment.
I mean, I think they're, I think Natalie's most likable when she's trying to like work her charm and pair with someone. It's when she is clearly being fake and like going against people that is not when her are least likable, which kind of makes sense. But like when she's like with Bananas or with Nelson, like trying to form a bond, like that's where she seems most relatable and likable.
See, I don't know that I agree, and I agree in terms of this, but I feel like a lot of people had an issue with her like cuddling to Bananas, whereas maybe people feel like this relationship with Nelson, while it is a relationship of convenience, seems to be based on more than advancing the house. I don't know. People have like a lot of shit to say about her scenes with Bananas. I also don't mind when Natalie cuts a bitch. Like, I feel like I'm now fully, I feel like I have been, I don't know what I've said before. I feel like Natalie is just like a good, you know what? Let me start again. She was the least likable when she was saying nothing while the other girls like did the shit with Kaylee's mattress. Yes. And she was just like, I don't know. But like when she's lying to you or when she's making a relationship, I feel like she's likable. Maybe that's why this was redemption.
Yeah.
I'm not even making sense. I should be fired.
I mean, I'm in on Natalie as a challenge person. I feel like people, I think because she draws the reactions of people, whether they hate her or they like her. Like, that's what we want from someone on the show. We don't want someone who's just like kind of like there and we're just like, whatever. Like, she's, you know, challenged threat. She's in the mix, in the drama, in the mix, in relationships, in the mix, in like strategy. So, I mean, what more do you want from someone who's just tossed into this world? I think, you know, she's shown that she should be coming back to these seasons because she's a good contributor.
Yeah, and I don't think there's going to be a chance of her not. Haley Strong said, how do I live in a world where I love Natalie, the challenge player? I'm with her on that because I like didn't really want Big Brother people in the house. I feel like I stand strong on that with Victor as a player. And I think my revised stance is it comes down to who they bring back.
Yep.
That's not really that hot of a take here. But I think Natalie is better on the challenge than she was on Big Brother. And she has her haters, which, as I know well, you haven't made it until you have your haters.
Yeah, I think especially for Natalie, she probably thrives more like a short edited version where I feel like a lot of people who hated Natalie were live feeders who had to see her like 24/7. So, you know, seeing her 40 minutes a week and not even just how, you know, like 4 or 5 minutes, however long she's actually on screen, is like the perfect amount where you can like her and not feel like she's being a complete phony.
We celebrate Nicole's birthday only to set up her crying at the end of the episode. I'm crying about how disgusting that fondant looked on top of that cake. Like, what was her name written in? Toothpaste? I didn't understand.
Oh, the cake itself looked pretty good though. I don't know. Maybe I was just hungry, but it looked good.
I mean, yeah, like chocolate frosting and sprinkles. Yeah. Wouldn't say no, but I don't know. They like put these like, it looked like command strips was being made to frost this cake, put her name. All right, whatever. And also, like, they dated 10 months and her and Laurel broke up. I guess we needed to know that for some strange, unknown reason.
So remind me, do we know what ended their relationship? Do we have any idea as to who ended it and what was the cause?
I have no idea. So we had, like, a technical issue with Twitter too, and I didn't see anything about this specifically. I'm stalling while I go look now. My impression from the episode is that like Nicole obviously cheated on Laurel and or did something shitty and then they broke up as a result. But as we see later, Nicole will not apologize without something else to say.
Okay. That's what I mean, that's what I gleaned from all of it. Also, I just didn't know if we had an actual word as to what happened and or whatever. So just curious.
Yeah, I don't know that that's been public that I've seen. But I'm like skimming. It doesn't seem like they've talked about it. It doesn't seem like we were expected to know, though, right? So for anyone who doesn't watch the challenge, Laurel and Nicole dated on, was that last season? Two seasons ago?
Two.
It was a big...
One of the things.
It was two seasons ago. It was a really big plot point because Laurel sort of had this, like, coming into herself moment where she expressed attraction for women, and they had what appears to be a 10-month or long relationship. And it looks like it's still fresh. They broke up right before the season. It is funny how we see Nicole like not talking at all about Laurel here. Like, yeah, we broke up recently. It's fine. Like, and Mel left too soon. And then once Laurel's on the scene, waterworks.
Yeah. I mean, I guess maybe she was keeping it all bottled up, and this was, you know, seeing her would be the one to kind of spur those emotions. And I'm sure they were asking about her in confessionals right before it was happening. So kind of all tied together.
But we get to the challenge and we hear that there's going to be a double elimination.
Yep.
Do we think they assume now that anytime there's a double elimination, it will be mercenaries, or could they possibly think it was just a one-time thing?
I mean, I think they could have easily thought it was a one-time thing. I mean, it's not like that's like a common thing that the challenge does. I mean, it's only really, I think, the second time in the history that they've brought in people from not on the show to compete in elimination. So, I mean, I'm sure they speculated like, oh, are there more mercenaries? But I don't see why they would guarantee that that would be the case.
Fair enough. Were you excited to see the opportunity of more people getting cut?
Yes.
We got a big ass cast.
I was hoping all four would go, and I was very worried that none of them would go. And I'd be like, oh my God, what hour did we just waste that no one went home? But at least one person went home, but I was hoping more.
So this, jumping ahead, we're going to get asked about this later, but I'm going to forget, and I just thought of it now. Like, do you think that's why we don't have like four, like, foolproof, bulletproof, missionaries would be a different story. Mercenaries. Like, is that why? Because they don't want, oh no, that's the reverse. Never mind. That were, let's say this, that they don't want four people to stay or four people to go home. That the ideal MTV situation is that at least one or two of the current contestants win.
Yeah, but I think ideally they probably want two to win, two to lose. I think that's probably what they hope for. And I guess between the two mercenary situations, that's what they got, right? So I guess average that, it worked out. I don't think they want it to be 4-0 either way. So I think somewhere in the middle, which is what happened.
I just want to jump ahead because now I'm sort of like, maybe that's why Nelson's ended in a draw and Brittany's didn't. Anyway, we'll get to that. Everyone stay with me because I'm acting like a 7-year-old who has an unlimited supply of pixie sticks. All right, let's talk about this challenge because somebody's got to need some help explaining at least the setup to this.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I was hoping you were, because I have no idea what the challenge was. Were they just going out collecting like pieces just to bring back and then they could steal? I felt like such an idiot. Like, I had no idea what was going on.
All right, let's walk through it. So there are three lanes. Devin opts to use his grenade to make the teams, and we'll get into that. But there are three stations for each team.
Yeah.
So there's a construction station where those people have to, or they, whoever you put there, has to assemble. What was confusing is that they went backwards. So they did the final step first. So construction is the final step where they have 45 pallets they have to stack in order to get up and raise a flag. In between, there is a suppliers group, which brings the pallets from their area to the constructors or construction people, whatever. And then there are rovers who have to either go to the supply, which is really far away, or be stealing from other teams' supplies. And I don't know why they explained it backwards. I am even more confused why I chose, knowing how confusing it was, to explain it backwards.
This was a wild challenge. I've been very happy with the challenges and all the eliminations this season. And of all the episodes, this was the biggest dud for both of them. Both of these did not play well. They were not explained well. They were just duds.
I liked the aspect of choice. I don't love that one team had one less person. It ended up not hindering the team in the way that Devin intended. But I kind of think for this challenge, like, that is such a big disadvantage in theory to have one person who can't be doing something when all of the, I imagine these pallets are heavy and stacking 45 of them and grabbing them and running with them is difficult.
Right.
I like the element of choice of like, okay, who and how many people are we going to put at each station, and that ending up biting Devin's team in the ass. Like, I liked that. I do think it was confusing, and the filming of it wasn't easy to watch. You know what I mean? Not the filming, like the TV show itself, I thought like was confusing to watch.
Yeah, it didn't play well on camera. Like, I mean, normally like I like them adding some level of thinking and strategy to a challenge other than it just being like, you know, jump across this from, you know, in the heights and just try to survive. I like them getting a little bit creative. They just need to do it better. Like, that's just, they just needed to come up with a better version of it and have it play better on TV, because this one just didn't. So
it is better than the last challenge they had for the mercenaries. So I'll give them that.
Well, that's a very low bar.
If you remember 100 years ago, the Anissa and CT doll challenge. Yes. Not for you, for the listeners.
Yes.
You made that challenge.
I did.
Let's talk about the grenades, though. So the options were to weight someone down, to tie up someone's ankles, or to pick teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think based off, at least off history, you got to go teams. Like, that should have given Devin a great edge to either, you know, at least win the Troika, or at the very least, like, stay out of losing. So, very poor job crafting the teams, but I mean, that's the grain that you have to go with.
It is interesting because, like, these are such knowable things where, like, how strong someone is, how fast they can run, or fast or slow. So it is strange that Devin's not able to assemble a team that can more predictably win. I think a lot of that comes from, or a lot of people thought that came from, Zach not being on his team. Can we justify Devin not selecting Zach to be on a team with him?
I don't think so, especially because one that it seemingly required like a decent amount of strength. And I guess, I mean, endurance is not really normally his strong suit, but you would think you would at least want him on your side just in case, like, he was at least for his strength. So yeah, that didn't fully make the most sense the way he constructed these teams.
I think he also was thinking, when you look at the makeup of his team, okay, he was so confident that he was going to win. It was Nelson, Kayla, Brad, Cam, and Devin. They think he's like, all right, I become the Troika with Nelson and we do whatever we want from there.
Yeah.
And I think he overestimated Brad's ability in the sand and maybe underestimated Zach. Although I maybe underestimated Zach a little bit. I don't know that I would have predicted Zach being far and away like the best person for this challenge.
No, I mean, there are certain things where Zach would clearly be the best at, but I mean, we've seen him struggle in a lot of situations where it seemed like, oh, like Zach's size should just overwhelm and dominate. So, I mean, I guess there's some level where I get him thinking, oh, Zach, you know, he's more like size than like ability and success. So I guess I get it. But I mean, this has kind of been his coming out party. I mean, he said, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago? Like, oh, now I'm clearly the strongest player left. So, I mean, maybe that's a harbinger of things to come.
Yeah, we'll see. This could be big redemption for Zach here.
Yeah.
How fitting that Laurel appears on this episode. Sorry. So we have the red team coming in last, which is hilarious.
Yep.
And the green team, which is Nicole, Natalie, Zach, Tony, and Brittany, coming in first. What for the three lady team?
Whoop, whoop.
And then the blue team, Leroy, Kara, Kyle, and Jemmy, four people down one, coming in second. Who should be getting credit for this team's performance?
I mean, it seemed like Kyle, right? Kyle seemed to be the one leading the charge and like basically carrying them. So I think you got to give a lot of the credit to Kyle.
Yeah, I agree. And whether or not, like, who knows if that's like purely accurate, but the show wants us to know that Kyle's the star here. Like, I think this just keeps adding to the rise of Kyle Stock that we've been talking about for a little while now. Probably got clipped from the last episode, but we've been talking about it. And I'm happy to see it. I don't mind.
Yeah,
it.
I mean, I think Kyle's in a really good shape, and I think they're kind of setting him up to be in pretty good shape. You know, he's being involved in all different decisions. He's doing well in competitions. He's not really, you know, his name pops up to be voted in, but he's never really strongly considered to be voted in. So I think that's kind of like a good spot to be in if you're Kyle.
What I think is great, and well, this happens a little bit later, but when Zach comes in to talk to Kara, you know, Kyle always downplays himself and says like, oh, I'll leave you two alone. And every time their person, no matter what side of the house they're on, is like, no, Kyle, you could stay. And I think part of that is just he's close to Kara, so there's nothing Zach's going to say to Kara that Kyle's not going to hear. Right. But it also gives him this way to sort of be, I'm this non-threatening entity. I'm not talking strategy. I'll leave. And then once he stays in the room, he's offering his input. And it's sort of like, I would say Zach left and would be like, oh, I spoke to Kara. But you have Kyle in the corner, like piping in. I think that's like such a good spot for him.
He's in the room where it happens constantly. He's not in the room. Like, he's not literally making decisions, but he's there and he knows what's going on in every situation, which again is like a great, great spot to be in on the challenge.
How do you think about the way this troika came about?
So, I mean, I guess obviously it would make sense the way like things have gone. They give, I guess, Zach that since he like did so well on this challenge that he would get it. And then I guess so Tony, I guess it makes sense that he would turn around and give it to Tony because, you know, he saved him and worked with him the last time he was in power position. So I guess that makes sense. And then for the girls, like, you know, it's for the Brittany side of it, and obviously this greatly comes back to bite her. I get where she's thinking, or I guess where they're telling her to think, you know, a lot of your guys are the ones who are going to be up for elimination and you want to kind of keep your hands safe. So you're not getting the brush back. But at the end of the day, you want to just be safe. I think you always got to just take safety and you can always talk your way out of a situation after.
Which is why it's like amazing to me that Natalie ends up in the troika here. Like, she's so moldable, or at least she presents as so moldable, that there's no one she won't throw in. And that's exactly what gets her safety.
Yeah. And not only is there no one she won't throw in, there's also no one that she won't protect at a given moment. So I think everyone views her as almost simultaneously an ally and an enemy. And in the moment, you can make her an ally.
Which is a complete benefit of bringing the Big Brother game into the challenge. But at the same time, I think it is an advantage that she won't necessarily be able to continue as she moves beyond her rookie season.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's always easiest to play the game you want to play first. And then when people see it, it's how you react. So, I mean, we'll have to see how she reacts going forward. But, I mean, she's doing the same thing basically she did in Big Brother. It's just a matter of if these people, and probably not, saw her doing it, maybe just Devin, and call her out on it. So now it'll be interesting to see what happens for her going forward.
So the way the red team votes fall are not that surprising in my mind. So we end up having Cam and Brad going in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way the team broke down, that was probably the most likely situation for it to go.
It is funny, though, that all of a sudden we have Devin being like, Brad, I'm so sorry, man. Like, my friendship with Nelson goes back to Are You the One? I'm like, oh, Devin was on Are You the One now? Now we're hearing about Nelson and Devin on Are You the One?
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about this. Why do they never, especially, I mean, Devin even said like they were on the same season, which I honestly did not remember to be the case. I don't even know if that's even true, but I think he said they were on the same season, so I'll take it for what it's worth. But we always say, like, why don't they ever bring in Are You the One relationships that are made on their seasons into these shows? And at least they somewhat did here.
I love the like bit of doubt you're casting on MTV and Devin. Like, Devin, I don't really remember you being on that season, but I guess I'll take your word for it. But wouldn't that be?
I so far don't remember them interacting at all. Like, all I remember, I guess, from his season is him and Kiki. I don't remember Nelson being a part of that crew at all.
Wouldn't it be incredible if, like, because you know no one from the challenge watches Are You the One, if they just like lied about they never met before? Devin was season one, Nelson was just on the last season, and they're like, yo, we go back so far.
I wouldn't put it past that. That would be a good way to do it.
Nobody would care sorry everyone for even suggesting
no
that.
One would care.
Okay, so Nelson is a little bit overly confident in Natalie's ability here. And to me, like, we get a couple of moments this season where he, or this episode, where Nelson first is like, all right, I think Natalie's got me. I should be good. And then he gets put in, spoiler alert, and he's like, all right, hopefully Natalie can do something to convince the guys. Like, why would on earth would Natalie jockey for you against Zach and Tony right now?
I mean, Nelson's becoming like a Charlie Brown character here. I mean, first he puts his faith in Kaylee and she pulls the football away. Then Natalie does it and she does it twice to him, basically. And he just keeps falling for it. Like at a certain point, like maybe kind of stop relying on people you just like start forming bonds with like 2 days in.
Yeah, you think. But what else is Nelson going to do, right? Like, I don't know. Kara and Kyle. You can take the girl out of the relationship with Abram, but apparently she's still like murdering someone when you have sex with her.
Yeah. And is fully embracing someone getting a tattoo on their neck with their name, possibly misspelled.
Yeah, that was like a little triggering, right? When she's like, he's like, oh, I'll put your name on my neck. You know, he doesn't know who the hell Abram is, but everybody who does was like, ooh, like, don't
Yeah, she needs to probably go away from the tattoo neck. Causing physical self-pain and absolute lunacy type.
So actually, topical, I don't know if you've seen Black Panther.
I have.
So this isn't a spoiler, but like at some point, somebody's torso is like covered with all of these scars. So I, of course, on the way home with my family, after seeing Black Panther, was like, oh, there was this guy on the challenge who used to take himself into the woods and scar his shoulder. Just like when he needed to feel alive. And they were like, what have you been spending your time doing? And I was like, oh yeah, he also tattooed his own, like his own neck and it shows.
And that was Talking Family with Allie.
No, that's not Talking Family. That's talking about the challenge. I thought that was a good way to explain to anyone who doesn't know who Abram is, who's just joining us. I've recently explained who Abram is and I think that covers it. And you should also know that he dated Kara very seriously.
You should. And he's a crazy person. Okay.
Was that okay me? Okay.
Okay me.
All right, go for it.
So, I mean, so we get the Troika deliberation. What did you make of the fact that, again, they were setting up no Inquisition, thank God, so that we don't have to deal with, like, two rounds of non-essential conversation? That was nice.
Oh, of course. Yeah, no. Anytime they want to lop something off, go ahead, unless it's a challenge or a club scene.
Yes, okay. Yeah, I thought you were saying they can lop off a club scene. I was being like very confusing. Like, yes, that they should always include those. And timing of it for the season has been great. The way they're slicing it in, like right after the nominations are made, and like that's becoming like that is the Inquisition. That like that's they just call it that. They just go to a club called Inquisition and just make it that.
Which we definitely skipped this episode, but I don't mind if I'm going to get a full four eliminations. That's fine with me.
So during the Troika deliberation, what did you make of each person's kind of stance and who they were kind of backing and who they were willing to kind of cut loose?
I will answer that question with another question. Perfect. Brian. Will Simon says, were you guys surprised the Troika didn't even consider throwing in Devin? Because my first reaction to your question is, I couldn't believe Tony's like first thing on the table is like, I'm not putting Devin in.
I mean, why would now Tony want to go against Devin? Like, what would be the upside there?
I'm not saying that I thought he'd be coming in gunning, but it seemed like more than that nobody talked about it. Like when he was raised, he was like, no, I'm sorry. Like he just like, you know, earned his stripes type deal. I'm not putting him in. Like I didn't think that, as I said earlier, spoiler again, I didn't think Devin was going to have anything to be gained socially from this. And it does seem like he's made at least 1 week of En-ROADS with Tony. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it also has to do with the fact that, I mean, like we said, I don't think we or they view Devin now as all of a sudden this like big competition beast that like, oh my God, Devin took out Bananas. Now we like, oh, we have to get him out of the house. I think they still view him as someone on like a normal challenge elimination that they feel comfortable going against. So like for them, they'd probably rather get out one of the stronger guys.
Well, that's what's interesting here, too, is like we haven't really seen this play out, but you have Nelson as the target here and they put up Kyle and Leroy. Now, I would think that Tony and Zach would be closer to both of them than Devin. So is it like a fake nod to some sort of alliance with Devin? Let's give him a week off. Or is like, and Kyle and Leroy understand, like, I feel like that would piss them off, who, like, those guys who are supposed to be your allies.
Yeah, I mean, unless they just made it, like, very clear that it's, you know, it's going to be Nelson, like, they were, maybe they explained that, like, you know, Devin, we're giving him the week off, like, you guys are going to go up, but don't worry, like, it's going to be Nelson, and then following through with that probably eases their concern even more.
We do have Leroy saying, you know, he's nervous, doesn't know what Tony's capable now, of now. And I, like, squealed like a pig, where I was just like, piglet, I shouldn't call myself a pig. I squealed like an adorable piglet. Like, that, it's so exciting, and credit to Tony and credit to Devin and credit to whoever you want me to give credit to, that this group of five or six guys that has been able to get down to the five and then eat each other is now forced to break up while there are still other people in the house. That even if this was an arranged deal and Leroy knew it was fine, there's enough to feel a little bit of doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely attached. Yeah, for sure. It makes things more interesting down the stretch, especially when maybe there'll be more double eliminations and less places to hide with all this type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it adds more intrigue going down the road.
So what about the women?
So, I mean, it's kind of going back to the fact that Natalie, like, she says she has people to protect, one of them being Nelson, but, like, clearly that's not the case because, I mean, she's very, I would say, not even easily manipulated, just easily, like you said, molded into what other people want and what she wants. Like, she wants Kara, like, at least she's put up, but she's not really strongly considered to be voted in. Like, it's the guys getting their way with getting Brittany.
And I, like, miss the memo when Kayla and Natalie became so genuinely close, because there was a time not long ago where Natalie had power and was, like, scrambling to make a bullshit alliance with Kayla. Mm-hmm. I feel like the Kaylee incident probably brought them together. So, there's probably a room situation.
Yeah. I mean, didn't they have, like, a conversation where they were both clearly lying to each other and they're both like, when the time comes, we're going to strike. And then we're like, well, we're going to wait for that to happen. And now it's like, maybe they actually are just friends.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what I was recalling from 100 years ago in my brain. But yeah, she, like, calls her people, Nicole and Kayla, which I think is very interesting that, like, Natalie and Cam have it. Or I guess Cam's already in. But I don't feel like I've seen Natalie and Cam forge much of a relationship like Kayla has with Natalie.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the dynamics. And I think, like you said, like, that big Kaylee incident, like, kind of maybe shifted some of the dynamics, where if you go through something like that, as wrong as they were, I guess it kind of bonds you together. So I think that's kind of where this is all kind of feeding off of.
We should talk about the biggest result of this is that Zach kind of goes against the agreement of the winning team and puts Brittany up. I have always kind of felt like, I don't know why these winning team deals have been respected. I think that this was totally, like, above board. I don't know why anyone was surprised. Like you said, like, if you're not safe, you're in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Was this, like, did this make sense to you?
I mean, so what is, like, why is it their focus to get out Brittany here? Is it just to split up Brad and her? Because, I mean, they already have Brad in. So if Brad goes home, then that splits them up. I guess they just want to do, like, a two for a price of one deal here.
Yeah, I actually really didn't understand. I understand why Jemmy and Kara go up. I don't really know why Zach takes Britt's presence so personally. He, like, comes into the room with Kara and is saying, like, oh, she said, I'll put you in the troika if you save me. Like, you'll put me in the troika. And I'm like, okay, clearly you just have an issue with her and you want to get her up. Mm-hmm. I think the most logical thing is that it's that she's connected with Brad. But who are even the options, right? It's Kara, Jemmy, Brittany,
Kayla. I think
Nicole.
I guess maybe I think Nicole and Zach are pretty close, so I don't think he would have gone to her.
And Kayla has said, you know, that was her big fatal flaw to Zach. To Bananas is to say, I'm close with all of your friends.
Right. So I guess it was really just like Brittany was the odd person out, and this was like his reasonings. Like, it's just, you know, he had to come up with something.
Were you surprised when Britt finds out and I don't keep saying Britt because I abbreviate my notes. When Brittany finds out and says, and Tony is sort of saying, like, oh, somebody brought your name up. would it have been a smart move here for Tony to be like, Zach is the one who led the charge, like Zach picked you? Or do you think that would have been more trouble with Zach and Brittany doesn't have a lot to offer?
Yeah, I think for Tony, he's probably better off just sticking true to Zach and not throwing him under the bus. And then if Zach tries to throw him under the bus, then you kind of admit to what happened. But it's probably better just to stick with your alliance, man. I mean, you're trying to get her out anyway. So there's no point of trying to salvage a relationship if she's just about to go home.
Let's get right to like the actual vote. Cause we talked about everything in between. Brittany asked for a heads up. Tony and Zach do not deliver the heads up. Edward Morris says, are you glad nobody gave Brittany a heads up?
I mean, it's like a weird thing. Like why say you're going to do it and then not, I mean, it's a thing where it doesn't change anything. You could just tell her right before. And I guess it could soften the blow a little bit. Now it makes her even more mad that you went against her, where if you just like at the last thing you do to her be following through on a promise, then it could help soften the blow.
I totally agree with that. I think Natalie was smart not to give Nelson a heads up. Like I thought that was a really good read on Nelson's personality, and not because it would have changed anything, but I just think like she didn't want to deal with him, and I think that's fine. With Brittany, I do feel like you could say like, look, it's going to be you, go in and fight, whatever. Beyond that, I think Tony had the worst handling of this when he actually made his nomination and she called it out. And he just says, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Like, play a better social game. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's like, what would that be? See Zach for an example, because when Zach says like, Nelly, like you got to earn your spot in the game, like a nod to earn your stripes. I think that kind of works for someone like Nelson. And if you say, Brittany, I'm just going to vote for you as well. That simple line puts everything on Natalie and Tony. And I don't know if it's believed, but I do feel like that makes a fraction of a difference. If only in that Brittany may be more likely to go home, but you still have Brad. And I do feel like Brad is somebody who could carry a vendetta for his woman's score.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, of all people like left in the game, Brad has got to be one of the toughest competitors left. So he's not someone you want coming after you and then potentially like calling you out if he gets tossed in again, kind of going down like the Devin route of like calling out Bananas. Like you don't want him being like, I want Zach or I want Tony, like especially because I mean, I think Brad and Tony already had a beef going in. So now this only exemplifies it even more. So it's very poor housemate, you know, handling by Tony.
No, I totally agree with that. But overall, not a surprise to see Nelson and Brittany go in.
No, I think we've had a couple weeks of like there being some kind of thought going into the votes. This was the week where it was pretty cut and dry from the first vote to like the actual vote.
How did it feel to see Frank and Laurel walk back into your life?
Seeing Frank come back was stunning. Like I never thought Laurel would be gone forever. I kind of always expected her to come back at some point. I really never thought I'd see Frank again. And this is like a great sign that maybe he will come back for an actual season, because at least we're seeing him in some capacity. So if we can get Frank back on an actual season, that would be A+.
I don't know if this is more of an indication or less of an indication that he'll be back. I feel like it's more of a likelihood that this would be that Joe's versus Pros would be a good spot for Frank if he wanted to do something again.
Agree.
Not that I think he'd be better for that. I just think like he has a life and a job and like probably doesn't want to. I think he has got a boyfriend. I don't know if they're married. Like he's doing things and I don't, it's like a Wes situation where like he'll roll the dice again for a brief stint and maybe not do the challenge circuit. But I'd love to see it.
I would say coming off these appearances, it's much more likely that Laurel comes back for an actual season. But I would say, at least for Frank, like I would say he was at like a less than 5% coming back. And now at least that's maybe at like 10 or 15 where near Laurel, I'm very expecting her to be back for a future season.
Not mad at it. I shouldn't say as excited because I guess seeing Frank was just like a shock. But I'm always happy to see Laurel. Like, I have really missed Laurel this season.
Yeah, and people forget she was, like, one of the original, like bullies. I mean, look at what she's done to some of the
OG.
Like, look at, not even the Big Easy stuff, but the stuff she said to Paula, like, that was some of the more cruel and, like, just devastating stuff. So if you want to go back to old YouTube clips, watch Laurel and Paula's fight.
Or don't, if that's not your vibe. So I will be avoiding that, I recall. So you didn't like this challenge.
No, because I didn't think...
Are you yanking my chain?
I didn't think this was what the challenge was when they explained it. I thought it was going to be one of those challenges. I think that's kind of the old school Survivor thing they used to do is where they just had to keep running around until they caught the other person. And like they had like a chain on them. And like that was the challenge. Like this was like a poor man's like less... thrilling version of like when they had like the tug of war. It's just this was just so bland and just like blah.
That's so funny. I thought of the exact same Survivor challenge when I first saw this, which made me think it would be a great challenge for like a group challenge, yeah. Team challenge. Yeah, I had higher expectations. In fact, I wrote, I love this in caps when it was first explained, because I just like that when they bring the mercenaries in, it's like a like simple physical, like who's stronger, who wants it more kind of thing. Did not play the way I think they thought, or at least I thought it would play.
Yeah, I think we saw TJ and I think probably more so production start to get really frustrated with the way this is playing, because I think they knew that this was like a dud of elimination. I think that's why we saw with how the Nelson Durrell thing kind of went down. I think they knew like this was like a dud of elimination. We need to try to like wrap this shit up.
Jeff Satora said, do you think the mercenaries did or didn't work this time? I feel like if the matchup switched for the men and women, we could have seen at least two or three of the players go home. The show just got unlucky with the coin toss.
Yeah, I mean, I would not even necessarily the coin toss. I think they just kind of got unlucky with who the people were going in to begin with. Like, I mean, I think their dream scenario obviously would be if like a Nicole or Cara was in, or, you know, even if like some of the more like if Bananas was still in to go up against a Durrell or someone else along those lines. I think seeing Cam and some of the other people that don't have really any history with the mercenaries. I mean, I guess obviously, yeah, seeing Cam versus Laurel would have been a lot more compelling, but it's not like they have a deep history together where it would have been like, ooh, seeing, you know, Anissa and Veronica go up against each other.
Which I had feels about anyway. I don't know. Like, if I watched Laurel, clearly Laurel and Nicole would have been like the match to see. I would have rather seen Laurel and Cara, where like the aggression is challenge based, is competitive, is like friendship. Don't rip my heart out, MTV. I can't handle it. It's already so small as it is.
I mean, even if we got like Frank versus Zach, I think that could have been really fun too. So I think just like seeing the people in there was what kind of made this one less appealing than the first time around.
And it's no coincidence that Laurel's coming in the second wave here, where someone like Cara or Nicole might be more likely to go in than in an earlier wave. What's so funny to me is like, clearly you want Ashley, no disrespect to Ashley, but you want Ashley over Laurel in this. Like for the guys, you want that coin to land like somehow straight up on its side and the universe explode and you never actually have to go into the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely no good pick between Frank and Durrell, but it's certainly not as easy as a pick between Laurel and Ashley.
Do you think we're going to remember this when we look back on the season? I mean, I'm not going to remember shit because that's my brain. But do you think a normal person is going to remember these eliminations?
I think they'll more so remember almost like the Laurel and Nicole moment kind of after. I think that, like, especially if that leads to like an exit season or a future thing down the line, I think that'll probably be the more kind of takeaway moment than these eliminations, other than like there being a draw.
I agree. I just think the last like mercenary, like Josh and Derek, we're going to remember. I think we're going to remember Cam and Tori to a certain extent. Like, I think those challenges were more epic, or those matchups were way more epic. And this was sort of like, oh, there was another group of mercenaries.
Yeah, 100%.
So Brad beats Frank. I thought this was really smart playing on Brad's part. And he sort of sets the tone to like go straight to your bell or go to that outside edge, because the person who ends up having to grip the wall is not going to be able to recover.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like. It seemed like it was, you know, whoever got in a certain position first was just always going to win. Maybe that was just that the other person would get tired more easily or whatever. But that's the way it played out.
For those applying the Bachelor Hap Ups fantasy game to the challenge, so no one, but I believe we have an I love you here when Brad wins.
Ooh, I didn't catch that.
I went back and watched it again. I'm 90% sure they go up and kiss and he says, I love you, like in like panting breaths. It doesn't seem like it was like the first time, but I was like, oh, what do we have here? Next up, Fantasy Suite. With pizza delivered by Marie. Wow, that was like the biggest pity laugh I've ever gotten, and I appreciated it so much.
It was a laugh. I just wasn't like a full laugh.
All right, Cam, it didn't deserve more. It didn't even deserve that. Like, I genuinely appreciate
it. I just want to try to forget that Maria was here, so that was worth that.
So Cam goes against Ashley. What I love here is, like, Cam and Ashley talking, like, shit with crazy eyes. Both of them, like, I have nothing else to do, like Ashley says to her. She's like, me neither. It just, I don't know. This was, like, a fun elimination to me where, you know, we say we want to see history, and I agree that would be better. But if we can't see people with history, let's see people who are having fun.
Yeah,
with
and how about Cam, like, getting tossed in the two eliminations of both of them going up against, like, mercenaries and both of them winning. So, you know, strong showing from her.
Yeah, I have no nothing but praise for Cam. Ashley, I thought the comment where she says Ashley's tougher than she looks was definitely a soundbite for the benefit of making Ashley seem like a mercenary, like on par with a Laurel. Right. But Ashley's a tough cookie. Apparently, Ashley Badazowitz says that Ashley versus Cam took 8 rounds, according to Ashley.
There you go. More compelling than we thought.
Nelson versus Darrell. We might remember.
Well, we'll remember just because of the weird decision to make this a draw. Like, I don't know what forced them to do it. Like, I mean, it seemed like Nelson was tiring to the point where Darrell was gonna win. I don't know what led them to be like, all right, we have to like get out of here soon because, you know, we have to like close up shop. Why didn't they just let him compete?
Which might become like, you know, that's like the, I don't know what I was just going to say. Sorry, let's just go to a question. I'm sorry. So Will Seaman says, I say Seaman. It's spelled like Seaman. He told me it's Seaman. I'm not worried about saying that on the air. I'm an adult, even if I'm not acting like it right now. Will from America says, why was Nelson versus Darrell declared a draw, but Joss versus Derek was allowed to go on for much longer until there was a winner?
The only thing I could think of is that it seemed like, for Joss and Derek, like an end was near. Like at some point, someone was gonna, all you had to do was rip the ring out. Someone was gonna do that. Here, it just seemed like they both got to the same point multiple times and just like froze and like couldn't go any further. That maybe like this really was gonna go on forever. So that's the only thing I can think of.
I think also that like Joss and Derek have to finish. Oh no, I'm sorry. Oh my God, I'm fired. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think Nelson is a more interesting TV character. I mean, let's put our tinfoil hats on and say it's more ammunition for Devin and they want Devin to stay around. Maybe it's the Nelson Natalie drama and they'd rather like have that than not. Maybe Darrell is about to get injured. I have no idea. It really doesn't make any sense to me how they played it. I was really pissed off until at least they said he's not getting a grenade. That's some sort of consequence.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helped that they have like a thing that rewards, because this is like very rare normally where like if you win elimination, normally you're staying in the house. Like it's rare that they even have a reward based off a win, so that way they can distinguish between a win and a draw.
Haley Strong has some theories. She said, did TJ have dinner plans? Was he worried about tapas hour ending? And then she provided a photo of like a big table of food that maybe TJ had to get ready.
It's very possible. Any of these theories are possible.
Let's talk about Brittany and Laurel.
Yeah, I thought this was like one of the more, I mean, I think they meant to be a comical moment, but like Brad pumping her up and then like the quick cut to her in confessional and her being like, well, I'm fucked. Like that was very funny.
Brittany does go right to weight class, and I was ready to be like, did you watch Joss and Derek go at it? Like, size doesn't always necessarily matter, but yes, in this case, I thought there was no chance. But apparently we have a tweet. Kara said that Brittany held it down for multiple rounds. She was not beaten one round like it was shown. She held best she could, but was told she would not be allowed what Nelson had. No more stalemates. She got screwed.
Well, there you go. She got screwed. I mean, this is like, yeah, this is one of the more confusing, like, not well executed eliminations that, I mean, we just had like toss this up to the challenge gods and just like never remember it.
I mean, like, we can't be down now. I like have no concept of who's on the show at any given time, but there was never a point where we were up a woman where they needed a girl to go home to even things out. Like, we lost Eddie. Like, we lost a dude. I guess we lost Kaylee. Is that what happened? And they just wanted a guy to stick around for the numbers?
I mean, are they even? Because they've had, like, it hasn't been consistent where it's, like, after, like, the first few weeks, it hasn't been men. Like, oh, man week, woman week. Like, it's been so random since then. I have no idea. Are we even in men and women right now?
Let's go to our good friend Wikipedia, right? So, here's who we have left. We have Zach, Tony, Nelson, Leroy, Kyle, Devin, and Brad, which is seven. And we have Kara, Jemmy, Kayla, Cam, Natalie, Nicole, which is six. Right,
so it's 7-3.
So, but we have, I'm seeing on Wikipedia that they're saying we have two more episodes and then the final.
Seriously?
So, yeah, tomorrow, next week, I think two people go home and then maybe the last is a girl's elimination.
Well, it seemed like
that's too many people.
Like, 10-second quick spoiler. I think they said like whoever loses the challenge next week goes home. So maybe they lose those people and there's elimination. So maybe we lose the three or four next week and then they do another like, only the top three finishers make a final. So I don't know.
Trim the fat. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. It's just, I'd rather them have a more like normalized season than like they cut, you know, 50% of the cast in the last 2 weeks. I'd rather them just kind of like have a normal build towards a final.
Let's like say we live in a world where the challenge is going to end just in time for Jersey Shore to begin.
Well, isn't Jersey Shore starting tomorrow?
No, Jersey Shore starts April 5th, which will be the week after the finale.
I thought it starts tomorrow. I thought I added to my DVR tomorrow. No. Maybe not. All right. Now I could be totally wrong.
I'm pretty sure not because for everyone who's still listening right now, despite the fact that my brain doesn't work, you know, it's like the never at the podcast you like that you lose. Like, if we deleted this one, would it be so bad? Last week, I liked
the show. I'm not going to lie. Last week was one of our better shows, like, ever. And it really sucks that it got lost to the technology gods.
You when people are tweeting at me that they're disappointed, like, no one's more pissed than me. And you.
Doubly pissed.
Anyway, so Matt LaGuardia now might do something with Jersey Shore. But if it's starting tomorrow, then I guess I'm behind. I think it's in April. Anyway, so we have some questions. Clark Wilcox says, would you consider the mercenaries twist to be a ridiculous and unfair part of the season? The chances of beating Ashley in a reverse tug of war are going to be much easier than the chances of beating Laurel. All comes down to pure luck.
I think I'm fine with it. It was just a weird season to do this in. Like, I thought this would have been much better played if they did this in the champs versus like the invasion one. And they made this the theme of the season. It was just very weird of all the seasons to do this one. So I'm fine with it. It's just a weird choice of when they did it.
I love it. I feel like especially with like how much craziness we have. I mean, we talked about this the first week. We talked about the mercenaries. Like, I love seeing Frank. I love seeing Laurel. I love seeing Darrell. I like seeing Ashley. I'd rather see Ashley like on the actual season than just in a challenge because she has a lot to add in chaos. But I don't mind at all. And when Brittany's saying goodbye to Brad, that had no transition. I'm sorry. This is like, fuck it, whatever. We're doing it live. Jemmy and Kara reacting to Brittany and Brad's goodbye is like completely my 2018 mood. It's actually my podcast, this episode of the podcast mood. Did you see this?
I think I missed it. Maybe I was just too focused on like their sweet goodbye.
Oh, give me a few minutes before you send the picture for this post, because if I feel like it, I will screen grab it and perfect. Make it the post for this perfect. Podcast. All right, so let's talk about the gut-wrenching soap opera that is this Laurel's goodbye.
Yeah, so we get, I mean, a little bit of what was said between them, but very little. It was more just kind of like them each staring and waiting for the other one to kind of talk. And Nicole says something to the effect of, you know, if you really wanted this, you would have fought for us. And then Laurel just kind of like nods and says a little something and then leaves.
Oh, how could you not be eking out every letter of every sentence they say in this moment?
What else did you grab?
Nicole, first of all, they look at each other. Laurel, right. Scene opens on Laurel's back as she walks up to the platform. inexplicably. I mean, you know, this was definitely like part of her contract, but whatever. She goes up. She awkwardly, like in Hitch, where it's like your elbows are locked when he's teaching him how to dance, touches her arms, not so gently, very strange. They look at each other in silence. Nicole is the first to speak, and she says, "I'm sorry." Laurel says, "I forgive you." Nicole, not to be outdone, says, "But if you really loved me, you would have done something more to make us work." And Laurel says, "I just wanted to say good luck." Oh my God. It was beautiful. It was the best thing you've seen on television all year.
I really wish we had the capabilities to play some good background music while that was going on, because that was riveting table reading.
It's like, this is us after the Super Bowl. Am I right, people? Am I right?
Where is the cooker burning down the house?
Oh, wow. Wait, is what? Wow. I don't condone that. I never would have said anything about it.
1 month later, it's in the books.
All right. That was amazing. Inexplicable, very bizarre, and probably nothing else to say about that.
No, I mean, it's good that they had their little moment. It's fun to say.
So we have some general questions, a lot of fun questions this week, guys. So thanks, everyone, for hanging out, giving us your questions. If you want to review us, probably not on this episode and the fact that we didn't have one last week, but if you want to review us, you could do so at robazawebsite.com/challenge iTunes. Thank you to MitchWatch2K18, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and MegFree1013. We really, really, really appreciate it. And to everyone who bared with us last week, we really appreciate that, too. We know it sucks. All right. We are skipping the Twitter segment this week only because Megan Elizabeth said not much was going on. We didn't see much going on. We'll be back at you next week. Don't worry about it. I think because it was like the reunion, people maybe played a little
probably
nicer.
That's probably a way to do it.
Got it out in front of the cameras. Marcy Gablitz, which I don't know if that's how you pronounce your name, but it's my favorite last name to say on the show. Marcy Gablitz says, "Do you think Johnny would have beat Devin in this week's elimination challenge?"
I would say his chances were much higher. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking it was the other way around. So I was like, are you kidding me? Yes. 100% agreed. Injury or not. Andrew Kirk says, "With Devin beating Johnny Bananas, does that make him the best Are You the One cast member on the challenge of all time?"
I mean, I think probably Tori is the best Are You the One to challenge person, right?
I was going to say, like, it depends on what you like. Tori's definitely up there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, it just depends. Like, you think he's the best competitor? Like, Hunter or Tori is probably the best competitor. But in terms of, like, a character, probably, yeah, Devin.
Ashley Bedazzlewitz
last on that
says,
list, but, last on that list is Nate, just by the way.
Oh, Siebes.
Yeah.
I was like, is that Moosty's last name? Anyway. Did you think Brittany actually took being lied to twice and being thrown into the elimination really well? I expected an explosion.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe without Brad, there could have been an explosion. I think Brad did a decent job of kind of calming her down. And, you know, when she went to talk to Zach and Tony, she was a little frantic, but I thought it could have went a lot worse. But yeah, I mean, she kind of held it together. And then, you know, when she lost, she's like, "I'm coming for you." That's kind of a normal thing to say. So she handled it well.
So we credit Brittany for these sorts of reactions. And I think for the game long term, that's certainly better. If you can remember Brittany of Are You the One, or is this like a disappointing outcome for Brittany on the challenge in terms of, like, for anyone who didn't watch Are You the One, she was making fireworks, making threats, stealing men and being proud of it, like fighting constantly. This is not the Brittany I expected.
Yeah, she's playing the game more. She's not, I mean, whether or not she played it up more for Are You the One or playing it down more here for the challenge, I think for her chances of doing well in the show, which she's on, this is better for her. And I think she's kind of building up of a stock equity where she should be coming back, where she doesn't need to force drama just to get a callback.
Gregory Contreras says, "Who has had a better rookie season so far, Cam or Natalie?"
I mean, I think Cam is probably the better competitor, but I think Natalie's been much more of a focal point for storyline, so I would say Natalie.
Interesting. I don't know, because I do think that Cam had held her own with the Mel fight and everything. It's just like Natalie's been more. And I think both Natalie and Cam kind of exploded on the social front early and have been like relatively in the background until this bananas issue came up. I don't think we saw Natalie for like a couple episodes. I'm going to say Cam, given the eliminations, but Natalie is so close. Like, it's spitting distance. Like, you're right. She's probably driven more of the story, or not driven it, but been a part of it. She's been on the Troikas. She's been in power. She's been scorned. So I think both of them have been great.
Both great.
Hard to say. So Matt LaGorie and I had a fun little hot take off conversation. Matt says, hot take, ? I think Jemmy may make the final for the first time in forever.
I don't think it's that hot of a take because, I mean, as long as she doesn't lose challenges, she's normally not in the mix for people focusing targeting her, because I think they view her as someone that they can beat. And she's not really hated that much because, I mean, she's in drama, but she's not really causing stuff. She's more just like in the mix of the drama. So I don't see any reason why anyone would be targeting her. So, yeah, so unless she loses a challenge and is forced to go in or goes home immediately, I think there's a pretty good chance that she is at least on the cusp of making a final. And then it depends on how you actually make the final.
I think she's high on the list of someone who's likely to lose next week and go home immediately. But I think she's also likely when the focus starts shifting to Jordan thought of who do I not want to run a final with. I mean, we don't know when they're going to find out the format. It's also possible they still have some team components, even if they only have one winner. And I do think the guys are not going to want to run it with Jemmy. Kara is also somebody who has said she wants to run with the best women. So she's also someone who could maybe put her in the bottom if she ends up in power. Yep. So actually, I will say hot take. Jemmy does not make
there
the final.
It's decided.
Hot take from me. My submission was, and this is inspired by Akiva and Liana and Rob and the RHAP B&B with Mike Bloom, which you should be listening to if you are not already. Not this hot take, but the hot take in general. Kayla, if she makes the final, will disappoint, and the best outcome for Kayla's game and reputation, the challenge, is a devastating elimination right before the final, a la bananas.
So leave us wanting more. Is what you're saying?
Who fucked up that puzzle and didn't get in the end?
We're talking about last season.
That Tangram puzzle. No, I'm talking about someone I don't know.
That's a good theory. I think always, you know, doing enough to get people wanting to see what you could do, and then always having the what if. I think that's kind of what we have seen, like the opposite for Marie. We've kind of seen enough of the what if that we know there's no if. So I think for Kayla to think that she could be someone that could win a final is kind of a good place to be.
All right, let's leave them wanting more now then, Brian. That's, I think, all we have from the questions.
Perfect. So we'll be back hopefully with one complete episode next week, not split into two parts. Would be wonderful. You can follow me on Twitter at @CohenBrian_. They can follow you
at @LashTweets.
We'll be back next week for episode 12. You can also subscribe at robswebsite.com/challenge iTunes. We'll be back next week. Until then, have a good one.